What's up, Dialed fam? Happy Wednesday and welcome to the Strength Training for Cyclists podcast by Dialed Health. My name is Derek Teal. I'm the owner and operator of Dialed Health, and I'm really stoked for today's episode because we have a really wide, diverse range of topics. Of course, they all fall under the umbrella of riding, health, fitness, nutrition, but this one's fun because, like I mentioned in previous episodes, it's like we're just having a casual conversation. These are all questions from people who either follow me on Instagram or who are members to dialedhealth.com and are part of the Dialed fam officially. So they're really relevant to people in your shoes, people who prioritize riding but also want to be healthy, fit humans and want to make sure that the training you're doing off the bike supports the bike as well, which is very hard to find. And it's why I'm so passionate about what I do. So today's topics are going to be in regards to running, adding strength training to a high volume riding program. So this is 5+ days per week of pedaling. We're going to talk about condiments and the extra calories you may or may not be aware of that you're adding to your food. We're going to discuss overtraining and go over some of those symptoms. And we're going to start before we even get to these questions. Of course, we have more questions than that, but we're going to start with a little conversation on being coachable. I actually heard this topic being discussed in a podcast that I listened to, and it really inspired me. And I thought I could relay the message because it's very applicable to even things I deal with in working with so many people. So thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I hope it's very relevant for you and that you can apply everything that you learned today. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please leave me a 5-star review on Apple with a little comment just saying, hey, I'm becoming such a better bike rider. I'm out of pain. I feel so much stronger and fitter. Or you can go on Instagram, and I'm really trying to hit 10,000 followers, people. We're getting close. We just cracked over 9. So if you could share my profile with a friend, tag a friend in one of my posts, or post that you're listening to this podcast to your Instagram story and tag Dialed Health, I will repost it, and I'll be so, so appreciative because it's not easy to grow organically or real or the right way and to not just go and buy a bunch of followers. So thank you so much for the help. All right, let's dive in. Let's talk about being coachable. This was inspired by an episode I just listened to of the Ed Milet Show podcast. He just interviewed the founder of Spartan Races, whose name is Joe DeSena. And if you want a good old-fashioned like kick in the pants, something that just makes you want to harden up and get after it, if you need some motivation this week, I recommend checking out that episode. I think it's only 3 or 4 episodes old. You'll probably find it toward the top of his feed. But during that episode, they both coach quite a bit of people. Now, Ed Milet himself is almost like a Tony Robbins. He does self-help. He's a life coach. And he brought up the concept that, and this resonated so true with me, that even though people might like your message and your product, sometimes they're like, well, I want you to do it, you know, tell me this way, or do it this way so I can implement it in my life easier. And although that can be very valuable business feedback, a lot of that stuff pertains to my website a ton. I listen to it and I take it in a lot. But there's also times when you realize you're like, oh my gosh, this person just wants to be spoon-fed. And the truth is, I can't make all the decisions for you. So an example of this that I get a lot is when someone says, okay, tell me exactly what to eat and I'll eat it. Just tell me, just write it down. I will stick to it. I don't mind eating the same thing every single day. And I'm sorry if you've even had this conversation with me, but trust me, I'm not singling someone out because I've gotten this so many times. In fact, I've done a video specifically on why meal plans don't work. And the whole idea is that I can't always be there. Like, I could literally live with you and I wouldn't be able to make all these decisions for you. And I promise you, you're not going to be able to eat exactly what I write down 100% of the time. And at that point, you're going to have to make a decision. You're going to have to decide to learn the principles to make those decisions yourself. And then if you mess up, you have to analyze your effort and learn. You have to ask yourself a real question of like, why did that not work? And that's the only feedback loop you can have for success. You have to think about it, make a decision, analyze the effort, and then go from there and learn from it. And at that point, you can actually ask a real valid question that is not only going to be valuable for your coach, but also valuable for you. Because if you're just asking a lazy question of like, you're throwing it out there just to pretend like you're trying to have effort, and you know, your coach can usually see right through it. They're like, oh my gosh, this person should know this answer, or obviously they just haven't tried because they wouldn't ask if they have, you know? And I don't think you should jump into everything blind. There are very valid questions you can ask where you don't have to experience something first, but keep in mind, no coach can be there for you 100% of the time. And so you have to be willing to learn the concepts and the principles so that you can make those decisions yourself and analyze your effort, get that feedback loop, and then you'll have real long-lasting success and results. So keep that in mind as you're being coached, and I hope that rings true to you, because even saying it right now, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm venting a little bit, because I want to help as many people as possible, and I never want to, you know, discredit someone's intentions or just assume that someone is being lazy with their questions, but it takes you to dig and to figure it out. So I encourage you to do that. We're going to jump straight into the questions, and the first four are actually by the same person. This is at TobaMaster5000 on Instagram, and let's just jump into these things. So, first question, running. Spokane is nice and icy right now. Road riding is dangerous when just around the corner could be an ice patch. That's a great point. So that's the question right there. And my thoughts on running are this. Now, running can be great for impact training, especially as a mountain biker. You do take a lot of impacts. Even as a road cyclist, you do take impact. And you want your body to be able to withstand that impact. And with running becomes a lot of deceleration. And the switch up in your training could just help you be more well-rounded. You get out of your normal plane of motion and movement pattern, and generally this can help you stay injury-free. It also supports your cardiovascular system, which is sort of obvious. But here's the truth. You can't expect to stop riding and run and feel as good on the bike as you did before. Now, sometimes cutting back your volume on riding a little bit and adding a small amount of running can make you feel better because of those benefits that I mentioned. But truthfully, there's so much adaptation that happens in the specific movement pattern of pedaling that, especially at a higher fitness level, you just can't emulate really anywhere else. You can do things like running and obviously strength training and these different movement patterns to support and help build your base so that your pedaling gets stronger. Obviously, I'm all about that, but I wouldn't expect yourself to all of a sudden make these crazy fitness gains because you were running now. Now, if you do, like I said, just add a little bit, a little sprinkle on top of your program, I think it could be very beneficial. And I totally understand what you're saying about the ice. I mean, that sounds sketchy and terrifying, and that's a legit concern. So I would just say, make sure you're still getting a good amount of pedaling in. This is basically why turbo trainers were invented, probably. I don't really know. But if you were able to still get a good volume of riding, then you'll probably feel the most benefits from it. Now, I just had a conversation with someone on Instagram, and this was just today, and it just so happened we went over this question, where we were talking about getting to 5 watts per kilo, and I recently sent in a question to Trainer Road that they answered at length about how I can get there, and it was a cool episode. He said he listened to it and said, hey, I just got to 5 watts per kilo a couple months ago, which is super gnarly, and I just started running, so my FTP actually just went down a little bit. And I thought it was interesting to note because this person's at obviously a high fitness level on the bike. And when they added their running, I'm assuming they're riding a little less, FTP went down. So pretty, I'm sure this person expected that to happen. I actually asked why they started running in the first place, and I haven't gotten a response yet, but just food for thought on that one. So let's go into the next question. All right, so Toby asks, is there an equivalent of a bulking season like bodybuilding in riding? And the answer is yes. So the answer is base miles. Yes, riders do base miles, and that's like the equivalent of bulking season for bodybuilding. So bulking season, if you're not familiar, it's basically a bodybuilder's off season. So when they're not doing competitions, they just focus on putting on as much muscle mass as possible. And when they're doing that, they have to be in a calorie surplus. So typically fat gain comes along with this. Yes, you can do lean bulks, but most of the time people, they can do clean bulks where you're eating pretty healthy and you're not just cramming Ben and Jerry's down your face. But you're trying to just pack on as much muscle as possible. It's okay that you're putting on fat. And then when you do your shred toward contest prep, you're starting to sharpen things up and getting to your high level of performance in the sport of bodybuilding. You are going to lose muscle in that process because now you're in a calorie deficit and you're going to be shedding off muscle. And the goal of going through a bulking cycle is to get enough muscle to where when you re-shred again, you still have more muscle than you did before the bulk started. base miles are very similar because you're basically accepting a loss in your crazy, snappy power, just throwing down those watts in a sprint to build a larger foundation and ultimately support more power when you peak the next season. So even though you're taking, you know, I guess short-term losses in that crazy power peak or those, you know, sprints that you're doing and you're just crushing all of your friends on your group rides on, or coming out of a corner on a downhill bike and just ripping the pedals, even if you are losing a little bit of that, you're doing it to build the foundation so that that ultimate power at the, you know, peak of your season can be higher than it was the previous year. So that's what I would say, you know, the equivalent to bulking and bodybuilding is probably base miles in riding. Okay, question three by Toby. He says, I keep a good tempo when working out with your program. Is there any HIIT workouts? So that's half the question. First off, I'm going to answer it. Yes, the no equipment program is a HIIT style program. And what are your, and going back to his question, he says, and what are your thoughts on them? They're definitely my go-to if I'm in a time crunch or low equipment. So yes, yes, yes. I do have these HIIT style workouts, as I mentioned, the no equipment program. And it in fact is a HIIT. Oh my gosh, talk about repeating myself. I'm just going to keep saying that for the rest of this podcast. So the reason it is a HIIT style and the reason you probably lean towards that is because it really is the most efficient way to get gains from a no equipment program, unless you're doing crazy high volume. I mean, there's literally people, there's a guy, Corey Gregory, speaking of bodybuilders, who he'll lunge for a mile. He'll do four laps around a track, just lunging. And you're just not going to do that as a bike rider. And I know that's the extreme, but you have to use such high volume to do bodyweight workouts and take a big rest break, you know, a 90-second rest break, and to get real gains from it. And we're not looking to do that amount of volume. It's just going to be too much for the riding volume that you're doing. So when you condense the time, it is just going to, you know, keep the lactic acid pumped in your muscles, keep your cardiovascular system pumping. So you get a great workout, you can work your total body and actually put out an effort that isn't going to be too high volume. So that's what I would recommend. And it's also really great if you're not riding a ton, because this cardiovascular stress that it puts on your body is obviously going to help with your pedaling in one way or another. Obviously, it depends on your fitness level. But if you're only, you know, pedaling a few days a week, adding in a HIIT style workout can be a really great idea. If you're already pedaling a lot, adding a HIIT style workout can be a great idea if you are able to back off a little bit on the intensity. And at that point, you're just doing it for the time effectiveness and the fact that you may not have equipment. Totally fine. Okay, last question by Toby. What about mental techniques? I'm a daily meditator and I'm working on applying that to riding as much as possible. I've never heard of that topic discussed when it comes to biking performance. Okay, so when I heard this question, it made me think of riding with or without headphones. That was the first thing that came to mind, so I'm gonna go that route with it. Now, I never listen to music or have headphones in when I ride. I used to on the road bike because I used to not really enjoy road riding. Now I love it. And I realize when I don't have headphones in, it really feels like a form of meditation. I mean, I just did a 4.5-hour solo road ride this weekend. It was like 70 plus miles, almost 6,000 feet of climbing. And I was solo and I had no headphones and it was awesome. I mean, I just zoned out. And there's times when I'll go on a ride and I have a lot on my mind. And for some reason, whatever happens, it'll be like 3/4 of the way through the ride, boom, I'm hit with my answer. Like I'm worried about doing something. I don't know what decision to make. And then somehow in that ride, it just hits me. And I know that sounds really just kind of wild and pretty granola or something. Like you're just getting in tune with nature. I don't know what it is. I think really it's like you sit. I do this with business a lot. Sometimes if I really don't know what to do, even with my next hour, because it's never a lack of having things to do. It's like, what's the most effective way to use my time? Sometimes just sitting in silence, staring at the wall for 5 minutes is enough to get that. And so I recommend doing the same thing on your bike. That's a form of meditation. And a lot of times too, I've gone out just pissed off about something. And if you wear yourself out enough and you are just kind of pissed, I mean, I can't really speak for women on this one. I mean, maybe as a dude, this is like just a guy thing or something, but I'll come back from a ride and I'm like too tired to care anymore. I'm like, you know, it doesn't really matter. Like, I literally don't have the energy to be mad about that thing anymore, and you can let it go. So I recommend getting out there, riding without headphones, and challenging yourself, because a lot of times you want to put in headphones because it is fun, you know, the tempo of the music and you're pedaling, and it just can amp you up. Obviously, I watch YouTube videos on the trainer. I think that's like another level. I don't think I could, not watching or listening anything on the trainer would be pretty miserable, although I do know some people do that. But on the bike, or just in general with life, like, we're constantly grabbing things to catch our attention, because it's just hard to sit with your thoughts sometimes. It really is. And when you force yourself to do it on the bike, for a lot of people, that might be your only opportunity to do that. So I would say do it. Also, just PSA, if you're a mountain biker and you're riding on multi-use trails with headphones, I mean, get it together. Like, literally, what are you doing? Oh my gosh, this is such a tangent, but we're going to go into it real quick. Not only do you have to listen for other people, there's animals out there, just a heads up. Also, don't you want to hear your bike and what's going on? If you got like something in your wheel or a flat tire or something, like, think about, just use your logic here. Don't wear headphones if you're on multi-use trails on the mountain bike. That's out of control. So, Toby, I hope that helped with all your questions, and that was fun answering, man. Thanks. This next question is from @ilikegreeneggsandham on Instagram, just a legendary Instagram handle. The question is, how do you know when you're overtraining? So there are physical signs and there's mental signs. We'll start with the physical list first. Here's a general idea of what you'll probably feel: chronic fatigue, soreness, pain, strain, persistent injuries, a decline in performance. Your workouts feel more challenging, so this is like your perceived effort. And then you could even have disturbed sleep, or just find yourself sick all the time because you have such a beaten down, weakened immune system from all this training. You're not recovering. And I would say with the soreness, you know, it's very normal to feel sore if you're strength training and riding regularly, but it shouldn't be like debilitating soreness all the time. You know, it's normal to have a day like that here and there. Or, you know, for myself personally, I can tell almost on most days that I've used certain muscles or trained. I would say with the exception of the day after my rest day, so actually as I'm recording this, I feel pretty dang good because I rested yesterday. I did my first workout today. But like sitting here right now, I did a 2-hour trainer ride and I can feel my quads are a little pumped up. You know, they're a little tight. And so that is very normal when you're that active of an individual, but it shouldn't be this debilitating soreness. I mean, if you are cringing every time you sit on the toilet, probably not a good idea throughout the week. Just, you're gonna have to probably start backing it off at that point. Persistent injuries. If you have like this shoulder that just won't stop hurting, or this knee that just won't stop hurting, you might want to reel it in a little bit and give that thing time to rest and recover. I think one of the most obvious things, besides this just general feeling of fatigue, is that decline in performance. Now, if you're working out a lot, training a lot, and of course that's relative based off of your history in training, but if you are quote unquote doing a lot and your performance is going down, probably a good chance you're overdoing it. You could just be quote unquote under recovering, which is sort of the same thing, but instead of maybe lowering your volume, it could be meaning that you need to up your recovery volume of something intentional. You know, what is it you're with your diet? You can analyze that or add some sleep. Sometimes even just adding those recovery things in, you are technically adding more, but it's adding more rest, if that makes sense. So it's something to consider. If your workouts feel more challenging, perceived effort, I mean, oh my gosh, that has so much to do with your physical ability, is just perceived effort. And they've done so many tests with this, you know, like if someone's smiling while they do a workout, they generally feel like it was easier. There's like all these cool tests on it, but perceived effort is something to consider. Disturbed sleep and illness, obviously not good either. So those are things to look out for. Now, mentally, there's a couple things. You could have lack of motivation. This is obviously mental, but this is not always due to fatigue. This only applies when you've been getting after it. If you have not been getting after it and you're not motivated, here's what I'll say. Motivation follows action. You have to take action enough times to trust yourself, and that'll motivate yourself. When you know that you'll keep a promise to yourself, that's motivating. And you say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to follow this diet. And you're like on the hook for it and you follow through. Then you'll stay motivated, because when you start pushing towards something, you believe that you're actually going to do it. So motivation follows action. If you're just not motivated, this doesn't apply to you. But if you have been crushing it and you're starting to feel less and less motivated, it could be just that typical burnout that every Gen Z millennial is talking about. I'm burnt out. This is tough. Okay, it's real, but it could be a couple things. So you could be actually overdoing it, or you could really, maybe you just need some perspective. First off, I'll keep that in mind. Really look at your life and see all the great things that are happening. Be like, oh my gosh, you know, this is rad. You know, maybe I didn't get to go on my helicopter trip and get that heli drop in Canada like I planned this year, but here's what I got to do. I don't want to sound jaded or anything, but that was my situation. So maybe you are a little bored or something feels a little dry in your training plan. And I think that's where you could address it with adding something new, trying something fresh, looking at it from a different angle or perspective. But if it's not that, then maybe you do really need to switch up what you're doing, switch your days around, just so that you don't feel like you're these, I don't know, it could be the structure of your program. There's so many things that could be leading toward this mental fatigue. So I don't want to get too vague, but remember, this really applies to you. I mean, there's a lot of variables there because it is mental, okay? And I'm no psychologist, psychoanalyzer dude, okay? But I have seen people lose motivation, and I would address it through action. The next question is from @BertSchwartz. What are the best condiments while dieting? You guys ready for this one? I'm excited to say this. You ready? Mustard, vinegar, and hot sauce. I hope you like one of those three, because that's all you get. I'm sorry to break it to you. It's mustard, vinegar, or hot sauce. You need herbs, seeds, and vinegar, basically. I mean, that's the three ingredients to all of those. You have spicy peppers, you have actual mustard seeds, and you have vinegar, and you have water. And that's pretty much it. I mean, mustard is like zero calories. And there's obviously honey mustard and different things like that. Just go with the zero cal option. Even a lot of hot, well, it doesn't have to be zero calorie. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Sometimes it's 5 calories. Sometimes it's 10 calories. Sometimes hot sauces can be 20 calories, but you can get a buffalo sauce even that is next to nothing, delicious, and hopefully satisfies that palate of yours. you also have a lot of low calorie prepackaged options, because remember, normal barbecue sauce, normal ketchup have a lot of sugar. I mean, you could unintentionally be adding 100 calories to your meal easily. 200 calories, no problem. So just for example, a Sweet Baby Ray's barbecue sauce, I think that's a go-to for just about everybody. Delicious, can't go wrong. But it's 70 calories for 2 tablespoons. So it's 0 grams of protein, 0 grams of fat, it's 18 grams of carbs, and 16 grams of those carbs are added sugar. So keep that in mind. I mean, I'm not against sugar, obviously. I talk about it all the time. We need our sugar. But you have to realize that there is impact there. Now, you get into like teriyaki sauce. You start getting like the Thai chili sauces. There's a jalapeno cream sauce from Trader Joe's. I'm getting really excited because like it's making my mouth water, like all thinking about all this spice and vinegar. But there's a jalapeno cream sauce that my brother-in-law introduced me to. It is unbelievable. It is so good. Oh my gosh. They actually brought us over a meal, brought us the sauce. I was so hooked on it. And then I realized it's over 100 calories per serving. And using just one serving is, and nobody's doing that. Dude, my one-year-old son is taking down at least 2 servings of this. I mean, it is just so good. And I realized, holy smokes. I mean, this is like 200 calories of fat I'm adding on top of my steak and my tacos. You know what I mean? It's just, it's reckless living at that point. If you were adding that much calories through sauces, you might as well be just smoking a cigarette while you're driving without your seatbelt, while you're texting 5 different friends. Like, you are living reckless. No, I'm just kidding. Well, so I'm not really kidding, but I'm saying to be conscious of it, because those are not free calories and they add up quick. And it's actually insane. But when you are in a deficit, the like adding a sauce like that to a meal or two could be the thing that stops your weight loss. Like that could be the one thing. And I don't want to scare anybody, but it's the reality. If you're adding 300 calories of sauces a day, I mean, your deficit, if you're, you know, trying to stay within 500 calories, it's getting really fuzzy at that point. And you're going to slow down, if not pause progress. So keep that in mind. If you want to add it and you're intentional, you're tracking, you know, you do a big ride, sauce it up. Just be accountable for it. This next question is from @inbuck9. He says, I learned the hard way on Tuesday that foam rolling late morning before an evening ride doesn't work for me. My legs felt like they were full of toxic waste, which I figure is pretty much true. What is the ideal time of day to plan your foam rolling sessions? I figure once I get doing it regularly, it will be good for post big ride recovery and not shock my system too much. But for now, I want to avoid doing it within a close pre-ride window. Now, there's a few things to unpack here. The first thing is the buzzword of flushing toxins. I've actually gotten called out for using this in the last Pink Bike article I did. I posted the guided foam rolling workout, and I put flush toxins because I don't want to say that's technically what's happening, because technically you are not quote unquote flushing toxins. Here is exactly what's happening. So let's unpack this real quick. Now, I am referring to an article. I'm going to read a snippet from BrazenLife.com. This guy really unpacks it well, and I just like the way he says it. So here is what's actually happening. He says, what are these quote unquote toxins that foam rolling flushes out? Ah, yes, another misnomer that we want to address. When foam rolling increases blood flow, it increases the transfer rate of all fluids circulating through the muscles targeted by foam rolling. The toxins, quote unquote, that are flushed through the muscles are actually just metabolic waste produced from the muscles themselves. So it's not anything foreign to your musculoskeletal system, which is why it's not technically considered a toxin. Lactic acid, a muscle byproduct from strenuous exercise, and the aforementioned trapped calcium ions, the chemicals that tell your muscle fibers to contract, are two examples of these quote-unquote toxins that foam rolling helps to remove from your muscle fibers. Then he goes on to say, the compression and flushing action of a foam roller then reinforces this restorative process in a second way. It increases blood flow and circulation into the area you're rolling over, the reason your muscles feel warmer after a good rollout. The increased circulation helps to bring water and new oxygen into your muscles to help them on their merry way. As a cherry on top, that quote-unquote hurts so good feeling you get from foam rolling aids in the release of the regenerative neurotransmitters dopamine, serotonin, endorphins, and oxytocin. It's the same effect as getting a deep tissue massage. You'll probably have noticed this boost of friendly chemicals if you are already craving some foam rolling at the end of a long day. Try our de-stress routine, yada, yada, yada. Well, that actually goes good into the next part of the question, because basically it unpacks what those toxins really are: lactic acid, some other chemicals produced naturally in your body. And so it also helps promote just general blood flow, which is obviously great for recovery, pushing more blood through your muscle, more oxygen. This is all great things. But he also says that it can be a real de-stressor, which is why foam rolling at the end of the day can be a great idea. It's going to activate your parasympathetic nervous system and just really help you wind down. That's going to just trigger everything in your body to say, dude, chill out, relax, unwind, bonus points if you're drinking wine while you do it. Now, I mean, obviously, be accountable for it. But if you can fit it into your day, having some wine on the roller, a little drinky poo of your choice, is an awesome feeling. It will help you relax. And I'd say if I had to recommend foam rolling at a specific time of day for someone, if they're only going to do it once that day, which is probably plenty, it would be nighttime. Before you sit on the couch and, do your nightly reading or watch TV or whatever it is you may do, you don't have to do it right before bed, but it will help trigger your parasympathetic nervous system, which is great. And excuse those burps, by the way. Sorry about that. I had some gum earlier, which I think is making me burpy. So, next thing, if you do foam roll before a workout, now, even though Nick didn't feel good doing that, I do it almost every time. And I can't exactly say why he did. I know he's not regularly foam rolling to begin with, which is kind of what he mentioned, but I pre-foam roll because of the IT band issues that I deal with in my right leg. I've gone about this in detail, but I had a ACL surgery that required me to use one of my hamstrings. It's led to all sorts of compensations. And so if I don't foam roll sometimes, there's just days I wake up and that whole lateral outside of my leg is just super tight. And if I don't foam roll and calm them down, chances are they're going to be overused during my ride and it's going to lead to some issues. So when you foam roll a chronically tight area, it can help realign your muscles and help you do whatever workout you're about to do with less compensation. And that could be a good reason why you would want to foam roll right before a session, maybe followed up with some form of activation. Usually for me, it's like foam roll, like all the outer muscles on my leg, do some glute med work, maybe activate my adductors on the inside of my leg, and then I could pretty much do whatever. I feel great. So that could be a reason why you want to do it beforehand. And also, I just have noticed with a lot of strength workouts in general, and even rides, it just helps you loosen up. It kind of warms you up because of, you know, what that article mentioned, but you're moving around. You have to use your own body weight and move your own body weight. So it's going to kind of warm you up, stretch you out. I really do recommend checking out the guided foam rolling routine that's in the guided work. It's 30 minutes total body. It's going to show you some stretches and some mobility stuff along with the foam rolls. And it's just a really smooth, efficient way to get your whole body. So if you're not familiar with foam rolling, check that out. Nick, I hope that helps answer your questions. I would say keep foam rolling more consistently and you may not feel that weird fatigue that you noticed. And get back to me on that one. I'd be interested. This last question has come up a lot lately, and I want to address it, but I got to give the credit to @RondellCanada for this one on Instagram because we talked about it maybe 6 weeks ago, and since then, it's been popping up left and right. Even in my emails this week, I had two people reaching out about this, so let's clear the air. Now, this is about adding strength training to high volume plans. So this is someone pedaling their bike 5 or 6 days a week, and it makes sense that you would potentially add those strength workouts to your hard days on the bike so that your hard days are hard and your easy days are easy. And that's kind of like what the conversation is. And I know that some really credible people have recommended that. And I don't think that it's a bad idea, but I genuinely don't think it's the best idea. And I'll speak from, let me give you like a disclaimer of kind of my perspective here, but right now I pedal 4 days a week and I have pedaled 5 or 6 days a week mountain biking back when I raced enduro more seriously, but I never for an extended period of time. I've only done extended period of time pedaling 4 days a week since it's been February. However, I have not missed one workout. That's on top of 2 to 3 days a week of strength training, a lot of mobility work daily. And I tend to strength train more than I recommend for certain people, especially people who ride this high of volume. So that's my disclaimer. I strength train a little bit more. I ride a little bit less than these high volume riders. However, I know what a hard day is on the bike. I know what it does to your body. And I also know what a really quality workout does to your body. And doing those both on the same day, it's just too hard in my opinion. Because you're either going to sacrifice one of those workouts, probably the strength workout, and you're just not going to get that much out of it. Or you're going to just go super hard and be so cooked the next day that it's going to take more than that next easy ride day to recover. And that's going to compound. And you keep that in mind, because even if you just recover back to, let's say, 70%, and then you do it again and again, you're just like digging this hole. And I know that it's not realistic to recover 100% after every workout, every week. And that's why we have certain training blocks and yada, yada, yada. But making your hard days that hard it doesn't make as much sense to me as keeping your hard days hard. Maybe you added more mobility that day. And then on your easier days, you can throw in your strength workout and then just reel back the intensity on the strength workout. So here's why that is different than reeling it back on the days that you're already cooked. That's because you're already cooked and then you're reeling back your strength workout because that's your only option because your body's so beat down. Opposed to being more recovered, coming into your strength workout on that easy day, maybe after your ride or even before, you're going to get more out of your mobility. You're going to be able to activate and use your muscles more. If you intentionally dial back the intensity, it's not going to fry your body as much as it would if you were doing that workout after your body's already just cooked. So a lot of frying and cooked references here, but I think you know what I'm getting at. What I'm saying is you have more control over the intensity on those easier days. And although it might feel like you're not doing as much, you are probably doing more because you're recovering a little bit better, most likely. And so that's just my opinion. I wish I had some sick studies to back that up for you guys. But to be honest, we're in kind of uncharted territory with a lot of these high volume plans with strength training, because it's very like dogmatic. Like there's a lot of people who just haven't, you know, the bro science of road cycling comes out in the sense where it's like, nah, just ride more. Like you don't want to, don't do a push-up. You're going to gain all this muscle. It's like, we got to fix these things. But it also, you start treading these weird, you're like treading water on these weird boundaries. Now I sound so vague, like I'm just don't know what I'm talking about. And I don't want to pretend that I know what I'm talking about more than I do. And that's why I give you my honest experience and recommendation on this one. So I think that adding strength workouts to your already harder days is just too much. But if you think differently, let me know. Please reach out to me. Shoot me an email. Shoot me a DM. If you're doing it that way, I also recommend trying it my way. And vice versa. I'm not going to say one way wouldn't work over the other, because obviously there's so many other variables that make that a positive or negative thing for you. It's like your schedule. What's the following day look like? What's your sleep look like? What is your, like, as far as your work and stress load and family and all these things coming together, what you might just get pushed one direction. You know, if you're going to be doing double days, you may not have a choice but to do it a certain way. And if that's the only way you're going to get that volume of work in, then that's the only way you're going to do it. But I would be open to trying it differently and kind of seeing both sides of it. So I do see both sides. I think both sides can work. I think my way works is going to work more, is going to work more better for more people. All right. Oh, man. All right. Let's wrap this up. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Dialed Health Podcast. Before we go, I just want to give you a quick little update on what I'm doing behind the scenes, so you know what's going on. So if you are a Dialed Health member, stay posted to the workouts tab, because we are uploading a ton. We've actually been uploading a new guided workout each week for the last month, and we uploaded the kettlebell number 4 workout today. So by the time you see this, it will definitely be up and you can go use it. It's an amazing workout, and I might feature it on Pink Bike. We'll see. But yeah, that's exciting, because we've been filming a ton through all of this pandemic stuff, and now we are releasing more and more and more. We even have an IT band prehab routine that's going to be going up very, very soon. So once we have all 4 of our guided workouts up in each category, which we're almost there, we're going to work on the next program. And I'm not going to announce what type of program that's going to be yet, but I'm pretty excited about it, just because it's going to hit a new demographic. And I think that'll be really cool for Dialed Health. And in that sense, I mean, I'm just learning so much about business. I mean, even looking at the last part of this year, I'm trying to figure out where the best place is for me to put my focus. And what I really believe that's going to be is on the Dialed Health Shred in January. And I actually got some advice from Nate from Trainer Road. So shout out, Nate. Thanks for helping me out with this. But it was talking about doing a Black Friday or like Cyber Monday deal. It was something I was considering. And he made a really good point that, you know, first off, I have to say, I felt like I should do something, because it's Black Friday and people like expect it, and not doing something, am I dropping the ball by not having a deal or whatever? But he brought up a good point that, you know, when you have a subscription service and you just offer to discount new members, and you have these loyal members who have been paying full price that don't get a discount, it's just kind of unfair. And I was like, wow, that's really true. So it is different. And that was enough for me to clear up the idea of, okay, I don't need to mess with this. Let's go all in on the Dialed Health Shred. That way, it's going to be for members only, and it's going to be opt-in. If you want this extra service, you can opt into it and get the extra content. If you don't worry about it. But it's a win-win for everybody, because you either choose to or you choose not to, but no one's actually paying less, which I think is definitely more fair. So that was pretty cool. And that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm just learning a ton. It's insane. We're about to crack over 400 active subscribers, which is huge, because you guys need to know survival is 500. And we're going to get there by the end of the year. I hope so. We'll see. We're doing some promotional stuff marketing wise that I'm really excited about. And I think we're going to bump up over 10,000 people on Instagram, followers on Instagram, which will be great for the swipe up feature. So there's just, it's weird to even care about numbers, stuff like that, but it's just, it, it's honestly, it's like real business. And I've accepted that. I really enjoy that. And I think sales in general can be really cool if you believe in the product that you're selling. And so that's kind of an update behind the scenes. There's just so many moving parts, and it's constantly me now trying to decide where's the most important place to put my time. You know, how do I use this hour to work on the business? How do I use this hour to work in the business? And I don't know. I'm loving it. It's been so challenging, and it's helped me grow so much that I don't know. I want to let you guys know. So thank you so much for being a part of it. If you are enjoying this podcast, please share it with your friends, share it on Instagram, give me a review, whatever you feel like you can do. That would be awesome. In the words of Jeremy Scott, he would say, don't be a lazy ass, help your boy out. So anyways, I hope you guys have a great week. And if you do have a question for the podcast, please email me, Derek@dialedhealth.com. It's Derek@dialedhealth.com. I'd love to answer your question, and I do appreciate it because I'm learning a lot as I do these questions with you guys too. And as I mentioned, I'm not doing in-person sessions anymore, and I kind of miss this back-to-back banter a little bit that I would normally have with clients. So thanks for giving me an outlet to do that. I hope you guys crush it. And you know what I'm going to say next. Start moving forward. I'll see you next Wednesday. It's Tuesday, so as I'm recording this, I'm slurring my words. I gotta go. Later.